With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Welcome in our new sponsor, Middle Kingdom Wrestling. Were you excited to see some Chinese pro wrestling when AEW announced that they would be featuring Chinese wrestlers on their program? You can now watch Chinese pro wrestling right now by checking out Middle Kingdom Wrestling, aka MKW. MKW is the top pro wrestling organization in China today. They are a unique pro wrestling company with Chinese characteristics. MKW has showcased, developed, and promoted wrestling in other countries such as Nepal, Vietnam, Thailand, South Korea, and more, with particular focus on countries that are part of China's One Belt, One Road initiative. MKW's live broadcasts in Japan consistently attract millions of fans, even often reaching 10 million concurrent viewers. Besides checking out MKW on YouTube and subscribing to MKW, you can also purchase the first ever international wrestling merchandise from Middle Kingdom Wrestling on ProWrestlingTees.com. It says, in Chinese, "Don't lay flat, get up and wrestle." This is a great, great art piece on the shirt. It's funny, it's positive. Best of all, it promotes wrestling and the Chinese culture. So take the call to action from MKW. Don't lay flat, get up and wrestle. Middle Kingdom Wrestling.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
Welcome to the Business of the Business podcast. I am your host, JP John Paz. With me today, of course, is my co-host, Mr. Trump Mania himself, Mr. Lavi Margolin. Lavi, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. We have a special guest tonight, Brian Cervantes, the co-owner of Mission Pro Wrestling. Of course, co-owner with one of the biggest stars in pro wrestling today, Thunder Rosa, not only a co-owner and partner in the promotion, but also the husband of Thunder Rosa. So a really unique and exciting guest tonight.
Thanks for having me on. We also have another owner. His name is Jeremiah Wilkerson, too. So there's actually three owners. So I don't want to leave somebody out.
No problem. I was just learning about Jeremiah. He just followed me on Twitter. So I'm looking to learn more. And Jeremiah, I'm hoping to connect with you soon. I'm sure you'll be listening.
Yes.
So, Brian, where did you kind of grow up? I'm always just fascinated. We'll get into Mission Pro, too. But I'm just curious, like, where you grow up. And, like, that always equates me to kind of, like, what kind of a wrestling fan you were.
Well, I grew up in I was born in Chicago, but I grew up in Houston, Texas. And I used to watch Houston wrestling with Paul Bosch Promotions and stuff like that. So I really grew up like that and watching the NWA and, you know, more of a Southern-style wrestling fan.
So when you, like, were young, like, how old, like, when did you start becoming a fan?
As far as I can remember, really. So I don't really remember, like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when you start liking football or baseball, you know, it's just kind of just happened. You don't, when you start liking it at such a young age, you don't even remember when, because you're just like, it was around me all the time. I had a friend that his parents, my family really didn't watch it, but his friend, family watched it a lot. So I would go over his house all the time and spend the night, you know, and they always had the wrestling on, and then they would teach me about what was going on, who was who and stuff like that. And every now and then they would take me to the Coliseum in Houston, and we'd go and watch wrestling.
Was there somebody or maybe a couple guys that you loved, like that really kind of got you into the business?
I just like the business as a whole, you know, like I used to like going back to like with WWE, I used to like be really big into like managers and stuff like that. I used to like Bobby Heenan and Sherry Martel and the people who were like over the top characters, really. Not so much like the physique guys or the big guys, but more so the guys who played characters or the women who played characters that were, you know, like very energetic, or the really bad guys.
How do you go from, like, let's say being a fan and then getting actually involved and being a part of the business and getting in behind the scenes?
Well, me and my wife, we used to go to independent shows up in Northern California all the time. And, you know, we started to talk to some of the wrestlers and, you know, get to know them. And, yeah, I just got involved with the promotion up in Northern California, just following a lot of the promoters around and learning from them and then seeing what they did right and wrong. And then we got the itch to run our own promotions and, you know, try to help out women's wrestling and get a bigger name out there for them.
How'd you make the jump to start Mission Pro?
Well, we used to run another promotion, and then we kind of gave that one up because it was just like Thunder's career was kind of taking off at that time, you know, with we had just moved out here to Texas. So it was like, you know, we didn't feel like we were spending too much time concentrating on her career, and we didn't have enough time to concentrate on the promotion. But then being off a year, we got the itch to like, man, I really miss running shows, you know. And when we started it off, we just had, it was going to be a mixed promotion, men and female. And then from then, the Speak Out movement happened. And once the Speak Out movement happened, we decided to turn it into all female promotion because, you know, pretty much because a lot of the females, how they were being treated during that process.
Lavi, I know you got a ton of questions for Brian.
Yeah, 100%. So it's really exciting to learn about it. So, you know, I think for some, like, it feels like an overnight sensation, certainly Thunder Rosa breaking out onto the scene. But certainly, as we know, and certainly, of course, you know, this was many, many years of hard work and sweat and, you know, her work and your work and support and so on. So one of the first questions that I have is, as Thunder Rosa's presence has grown more and more, and certainly as being the champion of pro wrestling now, have you seen a direct correlation in interest in Mission Pro, like interest in social media and ticket sales? Did that directly correlate?
Not really, because she's not usually advertised for a lot of the Mission Pro shows. So we don't rely on like selling tickets, you know, based on that, you know, Thunder Rosa is on the show. I mean, some people would think we should, but we don't. We really try to concentrate on promoting the other women instead of making the shows about Thunder Rosa, because we have a show on August 20th. She's not even on the card. She's there, but she's not on the card. She's just backstage helping run the show. So, like, what we really try to do is emphasize that there are a lot of women out there that deserve opportunities, and we try to promote them to give them those opportunities instead of just relying on just, you know, one or two stars to build the promotion around.
Sure. Without being too nosy, I noticed AEW, the stars tend to, depending on their contract, can wrestle other places. If the timing and the strategy correlates, would she be able to wrestle for Mission Pro if she wanted, or would that relate to the AEW contract?
No, she's wrestled for us before. Mm-hmm. We just don't rely on her wrestling for us that often, you know, because she will be having a match in December. I think she's doing a tag match with David LaGreca. So, you know, they're looking for opponents to face and things like that. So she does wrestle for us from time to time. But like I said, we try not to make the promotion around her because it's just not fair to the other women that are involved if you do that.
Sure. It sounds like sort of you build things up from the grassroots, and then when Thunder Rosa comes in, it sort of puts an extra spotlight on them, sort of pops the territory to have a worldwide star return, especially for fans that have been following it closely at the Salvation Army venue or wherever it's being held.
Yeah. Yeah. We always have other people who are on TV on the shows also. So it kind of always has like you always have a couple more draws to bring in, you know, your fair weather fans who only come for the big names. But, you know, like I said, we try to build it to where the younger talent are getting promoted and becoming stars. So they get opportunities. We usually like sometimes they'll get seen at our show and then they'll pop up on AEW or they'll pop up on a tryout for WWE or something like that.
Sure. My next question relates to the distribution strategy. We've had the owner of Title Match Network on our podcast before, which was really informative. And one of the things that we noted was that Title Match Network really concentrates and their niche seems to be in women's pro wrestling. But I noticed that you've also been on or are on Fight and YouTube. So when you distribute your content, how do you think about it? What platforms does it go to? What works best?
Well, right now it's just what's the easiest platforms for us to have access to, because you know, we're still a younger company. We don't have access to like run our own production on our own and then having our own platform. If that's the goal eventually, or a TV contract or something like that. So eventually we would like to not have to rely on other people to produce our stuff, so to say, so we could produce our own things and, you know, be able to profit off it a lot more.
Yeah. Have you had the chance to have any meetings with TV people yet, or that's a little bit down the road?
I think it's a little bit down the road because, you know, with Thunder schedule and other things that we're working on, it's kind of like I think it will come in time, not so like so much like right at the moment.
Sure. So one of the other things I was reading about was aspirations for live event growth. Certainly it seems like really a fabric of the San Antonio community. A lot of volunteer work and positive vibes there. But I believe you were part of the collective recently and are thinking about taking the show on the road. What does that look like?
Well, we have taken the show on the road. We've been in Oklahoma, North Carolina, Florida, in those areas. So we have spread out at times. We don't run all of our shows in San Antonio. We do run shows in Conroe by Houston, and we have run shows in Buda, like close to Austin. So it's just a matter of like finding the time and the correct venues and the correct atmosphere to do that. You know, it's not always easy to be like, oh, let's just run a show, because you got to find the atmosphere and the venue that's going to fit your crowd.
Outside of your home city, what city has thus far surprised you in the most positive way where the response exceeded your expectations?
I would say Oklahoma City. When we went to Oklahoma City, it was just like they were hungry for some women's wrestling, you know, because they don't usually get to see that in Oklahoma. Usually they have a licensed state, so they really just use the same wrestlers all the time. And we got a bunch of the girls licensed and brought them in, so they got to see a lot of different women that they never normally get to see. And I think it really, you know, we've done shows in Oklahoma twice, and both times they were really hot crowds, and that really kind of surprised me. I was just assuming that it was going to be like, you know, just a regular show, but no, they really got involved and were pretty much loud the whole time too.
I saw that some of the Mission Pro belts will be defended or have been defended on Women's Wrestling Revolution. Of course, Maria Kanellis' promotion. What's that relationship like?
You mean Women's Wrestling Army?
Yes, sorry. Thank you.
Yeah. Two different promotions.
One of the things that I was thinking about, also we talk about on the show week to week, is the WoW promotion. I know that Thunder Rosa was involved a few years ago under a different name, but just generally in terms of looking at the market for women's wrestling, what's the temperature like? Obviously, it's very mainstream now, certainly with AEW and WWE, but with some of the other women's promotions, like, what do you think the market looks like right now?
I mean, I think it's growing because, you know, like, you got Women's Wrestling Army popping up, and they're helping support throughout the country with different women's promotions. You got CCW that's based out of, I think it's like Delaware or something like that. And then you got, you know, you still got Shine Wrestling. Shimmer's no longer running, but, and then you do actually have WoW, who I think their new season is starting in September. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff going on. It's just, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
To get it up to where you, it, I would say, like, it's equal to the men's, you know?
Yeah. And what do you think? I did see Thunder Rosa when I was at the Hammerstein Ballroom for the GCW pay-per-view. What do you think about our friend Brett Lauderdale of GCW, how women are used in that promotion? It's sort of, there's really no distinction made. It's men wrestle women and so on.
I like it because when we were in one of the first all intergender shows in California and in Texas. So, like, I'm all for intergender wrestling if it's done correctly. You know, I mean, pretty much they only had alley catch wrestling for them until, like, I would say – pretty much until like about 8 months ago. But now that they've, you know, they brought in Thunder and they have Masha there, and they brought in some other people. I think Makito's coming there soon. So, I mean, it's good that they're actually, you know, doing more and more women's wrestling stuff. So it's exciting times, especially for a company like GCW, because, you know, they're pretty much the top indie promotion at the moment.
So you had mentioned that you're working on some other things. Any scoops, any information you want to drop on the show?
Oh, no. Most of that's going to come out at the beginning of next year. So, like, we're still working on details and, you know, trying to finalize that. But as right now, because of Thunder being the AEW Women's World Champion, you know, like, a lot of things have been put on the back burner just because of just she's never here, you know? So, like, sure. You know, it's kind of hard running the show with one of your team members gone.
Sure. It's a good problem to have, but it's a challenge. John?
When you look at Mission Pro and you want somebody else to get into it, what are, like, the best matches or something, like, maybe you can type into, you know, whatever, Google and say, hey, you know, this person versus this person from Mission Pro knocked it out of the park. What's a couple, like, the best matches you guys had that the fans out there can look into?
Oh man, there's so many of them. I couldn't even begin to, like, anything with La Rosa Negra, anything with Holiday, pretty much, you know, Thunder versus Maddie. You've had Kylan versus Jasmine Allure. I mean, there's tons of them, man. You got Janai Kai versus Thunder. I don't know what else is there, Jeremiah. There's so many out there. Just type in Mission Pro Wrestling, and, you know, I would say most of them out there, we try to make sure that the matches are very solid, you know, because we have agents for the matches, which is usually you don't usually see at indie promotions. So we try to go over the matches with them, try to help them out and make sure.
Like, all right, so thank you to Brian Cervantes, the co-owner of Mission Pro Wrestling. You follow Mission Pro Wrestling on Instagram at Mission Pro Wrestling. You can follow them on Twitter at Mission Pro Res. That's pro and then WRES. at Mission Pro Wrest, and then of course on YouTube, Mission Pro Wrestling, or you just type in the hashtag Mission Pro and you can find them everywhere. So thank you to Brian. But now let's move on to the big news of the week, Ric Flair's last match. What's going on, Lavi? I know you got the numbers. I was dying to know almost immediately. I wanted to know the attendance. I wanted to know if this was the end of Jim Crockett Promotions, and I wanted to know the pay-per-view buys.
Yes, so I was conducting like an academic study on what the attendance was. Not as crazy as people do with WrestleMania 3, but the first thing I want to admit is that I was wrong. The last time I was this wrong was All In. Not exactly, but when Cody Rhodes had said, you know, what was that famous tweet, right, with Dave Meltzer, where he wanted to get 10,000, and Meltzer was doubtful, and I was saying, like, right time, right match, not right now, more related to Ring of Honor, so I was wrong with that, and here, I was saying for weeks, 1,500 to 2,000, so kudos to Conrad and his team, you know, at StarCast and the Fight Team. We've talked about all of that. So we know for sure it's well past that number. The Observer number is probably the one that we'll rely on the most tonight, which was 6,800. And I think the amount of money was about 450,000. So just some other reporting. So an early report from PW Insider, I think the building filled up more than that initial report, was about 5,500 to 6,000, and saying that there was a setup of 8,000. So that sounds right in terms of the setup. And that number is probably what they saw early on. Now, Kerry Morton, of course, the rising star, the son of Ricky Morton, had over 8,000 in the building. A Reddit thread, I don't know where this, who it was, but they had 9,000 plus or minus. Alfred Kanua, controversial at times writer from Forbes, said the number approached 10,000. And most shockingly, ESPN reported nearly 10,000, but they said that that was a number given to them by Fight. So I think we could be comfortable settling back on 6,800 number. I would say somewhere between that and 8,000 if that number is off. Jerry Jarrett had to say to Conrad Thompson, I applaud you for your promotion. You joined the ranks of legendary promoters with this event. And somebody, of course, tweeted, bring back Jim Crockett Promotions permanently, Conrad. And he had one of those, like, you know, thinking about it emoji faces. So one of the things that I've been thinking about is sort of like, where do we go from here? And was this successful enough to sort of build upon? So the Observer again had that it was between 20 and 25,000 buys on Fight and 4,200 through linear pay-per-view. Aside from All In, WCW, WWE, and AEW, this was a gate number never hit previously in pro wrestling history. As far as an indie show, 6,800 was below a 2013 Lucha show at the LA Sports Arena that drew 7,000. And the thing that I've been thinking about is that one takeaway is this buy rate one that Triller would be further sold on pro wrestling? They've done boxing spectacles and rap spectacles, but was this number strong enough? And in my opinion, the answer is no. Conrad really? And his team did an amazing job, but you had like a one-time, you know, you had a one-time spectacle. You know, if Hulk Hogan was healthy enough to do it, and maybe he could do it at the, you know, similar to Flair's performance, if he was so motivated to want to do it like that, yeah, maybe you could do that again in a different way. But like, you put every resource out there, you got, you know, all the media potentially that would cover it, and still the end result was under 30,000 buys. I'm not shading that at all. It's a great number, especially when you consider that it's independent in some way, although you had a number of promotions supporting it. Even MLW, I'm not sure if it, when they run it traditionally, but on their YouTube, they would have the Jim Crockett Promotions commercials like sort of like as part of the show consistently. So they weren't doing it on their own. But like when Triller's looking at big numbers, right? Like you have like, you know, you try and bring in like Evander Holyfield for boxing or, you know, something like that. You know, you could do like 100,000, right? Like when you have the Paul brothers and so on, like maybe that's 100,000 buys. But here, 20, 25,000, like where do you go from here? That's my question about it. Like Triller might, like if they were going to give somebody promotional power to like run a promotion, you know, Conrad says he's not interested, but then he has this question mark emoji, right? Like, I think that would be a great person to rely upon, but I'm not sure if like, it's not like a blowaway number. Like if they're really to tap in and got 100,000 buys, I think there could be like a lot more that they can do with it if it makes sense.
Hey, it seems like it did more than the last ROH pay-per-view.
Yeah, that, what was that?
Right around that number.
Yeah, around that number. So yeah, no, it was definitely a good number. And I don't mean to like take away from it. I'm just thinking about like sort of like next steps, like investment. Like you already had, like if it was like a blow off to a title match, right? Like you already had that, right? Like, okay, Stevie Ray, you know, might be interested in like doing a show in Houston next year or something, you know, if that comes to fruition. But like, it's not Ric Flair, right? Like, so I think they could have fun. They could make money. It just seems like it's hard to go where like your biggest event potentially is your first one, unless you really build up your own stars, which this wasn't meant to do.
The gate though, right? Is the second biggest or the second highest indie gate ever outside of All In, right? I mean, like the money made was tremendous.
Yeah, no, that was great for them. I mean, in some ways you have to think about it like, and I don't think ECW ever had that high ticket prices, but like, you know, with inflation, right, with movies, before people stopped going that much and did streaming, but like, especially before COVID, like anytime there'd be like a big movie come out, it would be the record breaker because the ticket prices were always getting higher. So, but yeah, I don't mean to like to sound negative on it at all, but like, yeah, no, great merchandise money. I mean, ticket sales money. I'm sure they did fine on the merchandise too, a good buy rate. And it'll be really interesting, you know, where they go from here. If this is it, or if there's, you know, more to it.
So almost 30,000 buys, $450,000 at the gate, 6,800 people around, you know, actually showed up for the show. Flair's last match, Jim Crockett Promotions. It just seems like that is a great kind of swan song, obviously, for Flair, hopefully, and for JCP. But I don't know, that could, you know, maybe get Conrad's creative juices flowing. Think like, hey, 450K, not too shabby here. You know, second highest indie show. Like, you know, maybe I could do this again. But you're right, it'd have to be a Hogan or it had to be somebody of significance to kind of get that interest.
Yeah, and he had like every promotion outside of WWE engaged, which, you know, on a limited basis, I'm sure he can.
Well, WWE too, because Jarrett technically works for WWE, so.
That's true. There was no opposition, and the Observer had that WWE wanted to film it. They just couldn't, like, some of the backstage moments, they just couldn't work out a deal ahead of time, but maybe there's that footage anyway, so it might be used. So, yeah, he really crossed, what do they say, that the forbidden door. He really opened the forbidden door. So, but, yeah, there is a place for, like, super matches where it's, like, promotion versus promotion on a limited basis. So if this is once a year or maybe in conjunction with the other conventions that he does, if that's twice a year or three times a year, there's something to go from that. I don't imagine that he'd want to produce a weekly show for Fight or something like that. So yeah, when you make money, there's definitely something here. Maybe the best comparison is like the ECW reunion shows, especially the ones that were run by Shane Douglas, Hardcore, what was it called?
Hardcore Homecoming.
Hardcore Homecoming. Thank you. So, right, like the first one's really big, and then the next few were really big as well. And then probably it petered off a little bit because there's only so much nostalgia and people go their own way. So, like, I think, like, once you see this much success, you know, why not try something else? But I'm, you know, not only is Conrad, not only questions is Conrad interested, but I'm really curious about, like, Fight, because we've been waiting to see, like, will they invest more in pro wrestling? And we saw that another one of their arms was involved in this event, Thuzio, for the first time. So I'd be really curious to see.
Meltzer also was talking about 2013 when there was a big show at the LA Sports Arena that drew 7,000 with El Hijo del Santo, LA Park, Rayo de Jalisco, and Clan Caras and Blue Demon and Dr. Wagner Jr. But the gate was nowhere near close to that. So, I mean, there's been big shows, but the money, you know, the money factor, obviously nowadays, inflation and everything else, it's just that you could put more money on the line for, hey, Flair's last match, the ticket, higher price point, and that's where you get that 450 gate. Regardless, I think 6,800 is a great number.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, yeah, you'd have to go back a ways, like, to find other similar numbers, maybe like even in the same state, right? There was that Memphis reunion, right? Like in 94, that did really well. You know, every once in a while, you'll get like a big number, like out of nowhere, like, you know, at half that number, it was an amazing number in Ohio with the big time wrestling, those sort of things. But sort of sometimes they're like a moment, like sort of like right timing, right match, people are looking for something to do. The Lucha shows sort of like is a different environment, where that's the flash in the pan here. I'll be curious to see if there's something to build on. Certainly when you're, the tickets weren't discounted, right? They made a great gate. So everyone made money. So and Conrad has the outlets, you know, he's really using his podcast. I listen.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Pretty much the Jarrett one, where it was like 2 or 3 weeks. It was more less of the shoot interview and more of like angles, which were engaging. I stayed and I listened to the whole thing. So to have that with, you know, 8 or 10 podcasts that you can utilize for promotion if needed, and you don't have to buy the ads, then, you know, you always have that as a basis. Actually, that's years ago when MLW was a lot stronger, and they had their own programs, and they were the ones that first hosted Bischoff's podcast and so on. Like when I first heard that they were restarting the promotion, I thought it would be successful because like you'd have a base of hardcore fans that you can advertise to in a unique way on the podcast. So that is an interesting way of being able to reach people.
Yeah, very interesting. Like to see where they go from here. Obviously, Conrad, he's been doing great. Everything he's been touching has been kind of turning to gold here. So that is I know an interesting kind of thing to definitely keep your eye on as far as Thuzio and Fight and Triller and Conrad and Ed Free shows and Jim Crockett promotion, all that stuff. It's just got to keep your eye on that. Always up to something. You know what I mean? They're always trying something.
Yeah, yeah. And credit to him, how he finds the time to do all these things. But he has a big team now that are doing a lot of interesting things.
So what is going on with WOW?
Yes. Oh, this was something at least I was eagerly anticipating for a while to know when the show would launch and where it would launch. So we have some idea now that it'll debut on September 17th. It's available via Paramount's global content distribution. Interestingly, it will be in 100% of the U.S., including CBS-owned and operated stations, Sinclair, which we've talked about a lot. Next are Hurst, Tegna, Weigel, Gray, and Cox. So pretty much the big corporate owners of local television will be supporting it. They'll also be on in Canada, Australia, and Indonesia. So the remaining question at the moment is when, where, which stations in each market will pick it up? What time will it air? Will it have the opportunity to find an audience? Will there be ads on the station in support of it? And then hopefully we can get a rating, an aggregate rating for the syndicated programming, if not any local ratings.
So with that, who is like their big players? Like who is like the women that they're really pushing as like their big advertisers? You know what I mean? Like who's somebody that's going to get the fans' attention that's on the roster?
Yeah, no, it's a good question because the biggest stars, quote unquote, are the people that will not be going in the ring, right? You have AJ Lee, you have Jeannie Buss of the Lakers franchise. You always have David McLean, the original owner of GLOW. And not to shade anyone that's a performer, but you know, the person that was being put to the forefront, Tessa Blanchard, you know, is no longer there. So, so in terms of the stars, I have to, you know, look up who they are. And I'm curious, from whatever I've seen of it in the past, it's always been a fun group. Everyone has like a cute name, as per its traditions. But Holodead is there. You have Ice Cold, G.I. Jane, Genesis, Gigi Gianni, Foxy Fierce, Exodus, Fury, and so on, the type of names that you would sort of expect from WoW. So they're keeping that tradition going.
So what about West Side Gun? And what is West Side Gun?
Yeah, so, you know, pardon me for any big West Side Gun fans, but he is apparently a big deal in the world of rap. And he's actually been merchandising, even tying it in more to what's it called? The promotion, House of Glory, right? Masterpiece Promotion. He's actually been doing their merchandise line. And he does some other wrestling merchandise for his own company called Fourth Rope. There was a cool sweatshirt that I saw with Ric Flair on it. So he said that he's starting a professional wrestling promotion. So assuming he has the capital to start something like this, it's just interesting to see rappers get more involved in pro wrestling. I think that if anyone does it in a big way and makes the right connections, you know, it could give a very different feel to the world of pro wrestling. That's a different lens than that of like a Tony Khan or the McMahon family.
Interesting. Wow. So how come there's been a bit of a quiet break post StarCast? There's not much going on.
Yeah. So in terms of the type of live events that we track, for about 12 days that followed StarCast, there's no GCW, NWA, Impact, MLW, or New Japan U.S. domestic shows. You know, I think August is kind of like a lull in the world, right? It's just so hot to move around. But I think certainly a lot of those promotions being involved in StarCast and most of those promotions not running that regularly outside of GCW and then Impact, like if they're putting the resources in StarCast, maybe they take a little bit of a break there. So it might have just been a coincidence, but something interesting to note. And we'll talk about soon the shows that they do have upcoming.
What is going on with John Moxley?
Yeah, so I wanted to put this question to you as you follow it even closer. So in my opinion, when we look at the promotions that we just mentioned pretty much, right, he's been involved in big business, not necessarily the key all the time for all these promotions, but at sometimes he has been, but he's been involved in big live business for GCW, New Japan in the US, NEW's big shows, one of which was a surprise, so you can't count that, but he's contributed to that. And he's put a greater spotlight on promotions like Defy and Pro Wrestling Revolver. So when we think about like the, you know, outside the big two, the national promotions are the most buzzworthy promotions, especially in terms of drawing not only big houses, but attention that Moxley is like far and away the MVP of the scene.
I probably would say so. I mean, it's funny because it's like he's a big star from WWE, but then when he goes to AEW, you know, he's obviously a big star as well, but he's able to work all these indie shows and work New Japan. So, I mean, he's really helped not just AEW being the post-WWE guy and having a big name and being the guy that walked away from them wanting him back, really. There's like the thing with Adam Cole. WWE flat out, you could tell they just did not want the guy. Maybe you could be a manager. It's like, really? Like, you know what I mean? And less money. Like, they didn't want Cole. You could tell that. But Moxley, they really wanted him to come back, and he said no. So I feel like that created a bigger appeal for him. He had a good run in AEW, still has a good run in AEW. And then once he starts doing GCW and indies, it's like, wow, this is great. Like, he's become almost bigger than when he was in WWE, because it's like, wow, you can go to the live shows here and see, but you can see him in New Japan. It's just, to me, he really has contributed to it a lot of these, and a bunch of the other shows that you mentioned too, like Defy and so on. So I think he really has helped out.
Yeah, for sure. And it felt like Matt Cardona sort of had that for a while without crossing over to as many promotions, but certainly with GCW, NWA, and some others, but he's been injured, and certainly like Moxley's done it like, you know, multiples of that.
For sure. I think with him, he just seems like a guy that, to me anyway, I might be wrong, but he like loves this. Like, this is like old school wrestling, like territory days, or, you know, Wild West days, or Outlaw days, whatever you want to say. It's just like he gets to work wherever he kind of wants. He probably is making his own schedule. He could work for New Japan, which is obviously a huge company. Then he could work for GCW, which is on a smaller scale, but a big indie. You know, he could work for AEW, obviously, but then he's got his weekends free. So I think he probably loves this. You know, he's like the true independent wrestler.
Yeah, and he had some difficulties that he worked on, but it seems like things are on the up and up with a great family life, sort of independence to do what he wants, being an author. So all good things. My favorite Moxley was when he came in with the Shield, and those like backstage vignettes, and like when they'd come out together, like he seemed to really, like he had like a really unique feel to him. To me, it was like that crossover between like Roddy Piper and Terry Funk. And it was just like something that I wanted to watch, even though I wasn't interested in most of what was going on. But like when it was the Shield and the Wyatts, or the Shield against Evolution or something like that, like that was like, that made me want to tune in.
And he's had some good matches lately, and he's had some good stuff, but it, to me, sometimes you look at him and you can almost tell like when he's passionate and when he's not. Because there's been a few times in AEW, like he wears his heart on his sleeve, or like you can tell he's not that into the promo, or he doesn't put as much energy in. It's one of the things where like you could really tell. So when he comes out like full of energy, I think the fans really gravitate to that, because he's, you know, he's trying to be as real as he can. So I feel like when he's into it, the crowd, like GCW, I mean, he's super into it. The crowd like really gets behind him.
I think AEW came along at just the right time for him, and it's an important thing, like in terms of showing the evolution of the business, that, you know, he could get, you know, he had the support to get the help he needed, and he can work the schedule that he wants, like whatever commitments are with AEW, and then he can pick and choose what he wants. Whereas years ago, you saw the wrestlers keep being run into the ground, and that led to a lot of trouble in their lives. So hopefully those type of things are behind us.
Speaking of GCW, what's going on? Long live GCW.
Yeah, so just a few different notes here. So Brett Lauderdale, the owner, had noted that fans in 25 different countries ordered and watched the People vs. GCW on Fight TV. So that, you know, you'd imagine there'd be a fair amount of countries. It doesn't mean that there has to be a big volume, but that was interesting. One show to watch is Atlanta and Center Stage. Isn't moving along that great. It's on August 20th. They just have a 221 advance there. Although I've noticed with GCW that they're sort of like a slow burn. It's not necessarily like the first day, except for the Hammerstein, that like the tickets will fly out the door. So we'll have to see if that keeps moving along. But August 13th and 14th, especially the 13th, they're, last I checked, they're about six rows deep, sold out, plus GA. I think they could probably add one more with a week to go as we record this. The 14th was three rows sold out. Charlotte was a couple rows, I believe. Then they have their return, their big weekend in Chicago, September 2nd to 4th. Then they'll be in the UK, Liverpool from the 15th to the 17th, back to LA on September 23rd. They're going to be in Tokyo a while, September 26th to October 4th. Back to AC. We've talked about some of those challenges as the weather gets colder, but it seems to work for them anyway. October 8th and 9th, they'll be in Mexico City at the Junkyard, which is an awesome name. October 16th, October 22nd in Detroit to be announced, as we've talked about on the show. When they were in Harpo's, both shows did really well. When they returned to the Knights of Columbus, it didn't go as well, although they had lower expectations for that. So curious to see you know, how that turns out. While I'm talking, I'm just looking at what night of the week, because that was distinguished last time. It's on a Saturday night, so you'd imagine they'd have bigger expectations for it. And then back to LA again on October 29th.
Man, Atlantic City, interested. See if I'm around. You know, it's summertime, it's a little bit hard, but man, a lot of Atlantic City shows. Gotta love that back to back and belly to belly.
Yeah, I was reading about the Showboat, I'm not sure if you are binge on, but they opened up like an indoor, like race car, like go-kart race car type of thing, like on one of the floors.
Really? Wow, no idea. That's awesome.
Yeah, right in the same venue. So that looked really cool to me.
Don't give Joey Janela any ideas.
Oh, yeah, look, I'm zooming in. New indoor go-kart racetrack opens at the Showboat. And that was late May.
That's awesome. Oh, now I might have to go. Damn.
Yeah.
For GCW as well. But I mean, I might have to go to the go-kart. Nice.
We'll have to get some picks.
They got a lot of shows coming up. It's just it's pretty impressive just like to look at it and think like, wow, they're having a tour in Japan and they're, you know, Atlantic City four times, LA, Detroit, Chicago, Atlanta, Charlotte. I mean, these are some big towns that run here. LA, again, of course, and then Liverpool. I mean, it's pretty big time.
Yeah, they're in the rhythm. You know, they seem to be making money from it, you know, keep it going and keep building and to have that volume, you know, is difficult. I guess you have sort of like when you can do at least two shows back to back, which they don't usually do more than that domestically, but you have those economies of scale, right? If you're flying in talent, you only have to fly them in one way and fly them back the other way. I mean, you have the hotel room, which maybe if you have multiple days for multiple wrestlers, you know, you could get a discount on that. We've seen there's a promotion in New York now, Outlaw Wrestling, that they're actually trying four nights in New York, like Brooklyn, Queens, and so on. So like if you're bringing in talent, you know, it makes sense. Like if you can effectively promote a number of days, like, you know, your chances of success in terms of driving down the costs are greater than, especially if you're flying people in rather than like one off and then everyone goes out back out to do whatever they were doing.
What is going on with Impact Wrestling?
Yeah, so a little bit of controversy. We'll talk about my survey later. WrestleTix had, you know, like I do by hand, they did it, of course, by computer, because it's a Ticketmaster map, Cicero Stadium. I just wanted to, like, be clear that people could see that it was under 400 seats meant a sellout, because we've had MLW, you know, it had been reported like 2,000 in the past, something like that. But one thing to account for is that it did not, Impact show did not account for GA. So some people pointed that out reasonably. But I was saying it like in a little bit of a snarky way. So I understand why why people got upset if they're huge Impact fans. But that is something important to note. Like we've seen in the past, like don't celebrate a venue being sold out. If it's a bigger venue, if you're not paying attention to how many seats were sold, because if you don't open up as many seats, like even WWE and AEW do this sometimes, you could say sell out, but like, is Madison Square Garden a sellout with 11,000 seats when it could hold 20? Only so much, you know, only on a technicality.
So technically they are sold out, but how are they doing otherwise, like Bound for Glory, Skyway Studios, like how are their attendance everywhere else?
Yeah, so Skyway Studios just opened up a September double shot. It was interesting because they were actually supposed to have been in Philly. So they decided to move that. Nashville is sort of their second home. I guess you could say their U.S. home for sure still, where they have some of their production studios. I was actually surprised that Skyway Studios set up. There's a number of different lots, I think, but this was set up a little bit over 300. So that's a good number for them. Pretty much where they are is like a live event attraction. And Albany, New York in October, they announced the date in the city, but not the venue. So I was thinking that it'll probably be at the old Guard Armory, where Big Time Wrestling just had a show, and the old WWF shows, had been, but probably a few different options. So that's something to watch.
What about the NWA? Almost closed? Is that accurate?
Yeah. So that was really interesting. Billy Corgan had noted that he almost decide not to bring the NWA back during that time. It was a weird time for the promotion. I think that was about the time that David Lagana, right? If I'm saying the right person, was canceled, sort of for whatever controversy came up in his past, who was involved in the promotion. So maybe at that chance, he was, he didn't have somebody to run the show and had to think about it in that way. But he said that made him want to get more involved in things, and he decided not to. But I remember we were talking about, like, there was sort of like a new take on wrestling, that they had a YouTube show that just didn't come across well. So it was like a time of like confusion, but it seemed like that they got things going again. They rebuilt their staff up. People that were on screen took on backstage roles as well. So, NWA is off and running now.
So what is going on with some streaming stuff? Like, maybe we could start with High Spots.
Yeah, so it's a little bit confusing to me, even with like the branding with High Spots, right? There's High Spots, but now there's highspots.tv. There's something else, but basically AAW signed a deal with highspots.tv. So it's something interesting to watch, because we start seeing, like, it looked like it was down to two players, even though it didn't get completely quiet. You always had different players at different levels, but you have Pro Wrestling TV now signing people up. High Spots, it looked like that they were working more with IWTV, but you know, maybe they still are, but they're doing their own thing too. So they're, you know, based on how much content they have to be considered a player and the connections that they have. And PCW Ultra, who has a lot of buzzworthy talent, especially like MLW talent, they announced that they signed a streaming deal with the biggest player. So curious to see what that means. Sometimes that means Amazon, but it's not like, it's sort of like, okay, you could distribute through Amazon, but you're not making a lot of money. It's based on like how many people view it on Amazon, or maybe something else is meant by that. But that's something to watch out for.
PCW. I feel like I know they were big at one point, but they kind of died off a bit. I feel like.
Yeah, they. Where I started noticing it was that they were putting up some good numbers, like in terms of like 1,000 people in attendance. I think Hammerstone and Fatu, you know, are there. So I'm not sure of their buzz. You're right. We don't hear as much about it, but curious to see what type of deal that they signed.
Guess what time it is, Lavi? It is survey time, Scott Hall style. One more for the good guys. Now, you put out a survey. Which wrestling promotion is the most likely to get a U.S. TV deal within the next 12 months? What do you think? What is the options, if you will?
Yes. So 103 people were surveyed, and the options are CMLL, Freddie Prinze Jr.'s promotion, or forthcoming promotion, the NWA and ROH. And this is based on what we had talked about as our main subject last week. So it's actually interesting that the responses are sort of the inverse of what I think will happen. So, you know, the promotion that you would imagine would be most desired, I agree with everyone, 69.9% said ROH. But I think that's somewhat complicated in that... you know, Tony Khan will expect a bigger deal for that. Whereas the other promotions like CMLL is just sort of happy to get on the air, I would assume. Freddie Prinze Jr., you know, is going to be funding his promotion to some degree. I'm not sure what type of rights deal that he's seeking. And the NWA is seeking its first television deal.
ROH, big win there. So, you know, was everybody here to see Freddie Prinze? Boo, boo. Was everybody here to see the ROH? Yeah, another one for the good guys. So everybody wants ROH on TV.
See, John, you're ready next time they have the Family Feud. I think you do a great job.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect. You also had another survey. Do you feel my reporting, obviously meaning you, do you feel my reporting on Impact Wrestling, such as attendance figures, is biased as compared to some of the other promotions? Yes, no, not sure. What's the impact here? What happened?
Yes, so the impetus of it was that when I was tweeting about the attendance number in Chicago for Impact, that somebody tweeted me that, you know, I'm biased against them and so on, whereas myself, I always thought I'm just sharing the numbers as I have them. 44 people responded to this, of course, somewhat impacted in terms of like the amount of people that would see or even be aware of me. to answer this, right? Like if it's coming up in someone else's feed, they might be like, who is this? You know, so, but interestingly, 25% of people do feel that I'm biased about Impact Wrestling. Another 18% are not sure if I am. And 56% felt that I'm not biased. So a little bit surprised that a fair amount of people feel that I am. I feel that I'm not, as we always do. Look at the numbers, right? Like, you know, I'm just counting seat maps, and we praise Impact on this show often as well. I think even as much as last week, talking about their wide distribution in terms of FAST.
It's funny though. Why would people think that you were, you know, being against them or whatever? Like, you're just counting the numbers, and yeah, there might be some walk-ups, and you'll cover that after the show is over. You know what I mean? It's just weird that they would think that.
I think it's sort of like that fandom where you're like, you know, some people are really into Impact, or they used to be into TNA, and they just don't want to believe that they're sort of not at the same level where they used to be. So, you know, in their minds, there could be X amount of multiples of people in the general admission tickets, and the reserve seats don't show the whole story. So my philosophy is that if we don't know, we do apples to apples comparison. What was the reserve last time they were in the town, or last quarter, or last year, and how does it compare to this year? And that's the best way of looking at it. And then people can ultimately draw their own conclusions.
Yeah, weird stuff. It's like, oh, you know, they get very like personal about it. Like, oh no, you missed 60 tickets, or, you know, whatever. It's like, we'll get there. We'll recap. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's sort of like John, I don't know if you had this phase, like as a teenager or whatever, like when you're not that busy with other things, like pro wrestling and sport, like, you know, how your sports team is doing, or like even your favorite band, if somebody disagrees, right? Like you get like really into it and want to like argue with them about that. Whereas like, for me, at least in my 40s, it's sort of like, you know, sharing the facts, take it for what you will, but ultimately it's not, you know, it's interesting and it's important, but it's not that important that it's going to affect my day.
Yes, for sure. So let's hit the plugs. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com, and Patreon, patreon.com/tmptempire. Lavi, what do you got?
Yeah, follow me on Twitter, Lavi Marg, LavieMarg. Check out my long-form articles on lioncubjobsearch.com. It's been a long show, many topics, but I don't want to forget that we are the official business podcast of SE Scoops, and we'd like to thank our sponsor or advertiser, Middle Kingdom Wrestling. Check out their YouTube page. You know, lots of unique content from the promotion that has really made things work, has made inroads on the Belt and Road, right, in China. And certainly let them see the success of their campaign on pro wrestling tees. They have a very unique and cute t-shirt with everyone loves cats, cell phones, pro wrestling, Chinese characteristics. So support their work. We really appreciate what they're doing for the show.
Everybody get out there and support MKW. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little business of the business. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.